The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
I was utterly fascinated coming in the building. I was a wee bit early. To pick up this magazine or newspaper, The Streets of Barangaroo. I'm sorry, I have no idea how to pronounce this. It was fascinating because it says, amongst the other things, how's your day and how to set yourself up for success. Number five is nourish the body and soul. So I can observe from some of you that you're already nourishing the body, and I hope that what we will look at just now will help you nourish the soul. Now, I also, like Maddie, I apologize if I offend anyone. In fact, the way I normally do this is I apologize if I don't offend you, because you then may feel left out. So I try not to offend people, but I just think out loud. It would be great to have some Q&A. Now, Christmas is kind of really strange if you're from where I'm from, which is the Northern Hemisphere. And I'm right now in my home village in the Highlands of Scotland. It was -8 degrees last night. So, and this weather today is absolute blazing summer. You know, I just hope it doesn't get any hotter than here. I can hardly cope. But also, in my home area, it gets dark about 3:30 in the afternoon right now. And it doesn't get light till 9 o'clock. So we've only got 6 hours of daylight. So candles and everything make sense. And people in woolly hats and red Santa outfits, that makes sense. But it doesn't make sense here, but it still happens. And I saw some kids queuing up for Santa. And I don't know if any of you heard this story, but in Harrods, the really posh toy store in London, not just toy store, but just posh, and they have a Santa. And there's a big queue for Santa, but you get to go on the fast track. It's like, you know, your Virgin Premier or something. You get to go on the fast track if you spend £2,000, which is $4,000 in the store. So I just, to me, that seems the antithesis of what Christmas is meant to be about. Now, we're going to just say a little bit about miracles, and I want to look at it at a little bit of a deeper level, because people do talk about miracle at Christmas and what we mean by miracle. When I say about my teenage son, when I see him in the morning, oh, it's a miracle you got out of bed. It's not really a miracle. If I say that it's a miracle when the Australian rugby team win a game, that's... Don't worry, we're only warming up. That's as pretty close to a miracle as you're going to get out with a miracle. We use miracle in different ways. And I think the definition I like best of all is C.S. Lewis's one. I use the word miracle to mean an interference with nature by a supernatural power. Now, here's the problem with that. If you de facto believe that there is no supernatural power, then you're going to say, well, that miracles can't happen. If you say, well, you know, I just believe that there are miracles all the time, then you're going to say that miracles do happen. And I think that there's a way out of this kind of impasse. Christopher Hitchens, who's a well-known atheist, who I actually had a great deal of time for, sadly he's now dead, but he wrote this: our belief is not a belief, our principles are not a faith, we do not rely solely upon science and reason because these are necessary rather than sufficient factors, but we distrust anything that contradicts science or outrages reason. We may differ on many things, but what we respect is free inquiry, open-mindedness, and the pursuit of ideas for their own sake. We do not hold our convictions dogmatically. And here's a challenge for you. All of us have different beliefs by which we approach anything. Some of us, our beliefs can be proven wrong pretty easily. So if you buy into the zeitgeist of the culture and you start singing, I believe I can fly, I believe I can touch the sky, to prove you wrong, I will open one of these windows and invite you to leave. And let's see how you can fly. But all of us come with, we have things from our backgrounds, our cultures, our presuppositions, our peer groups, our prejudices. And we must, what I'm trying to encourage us to do is we must open up and think, what if I'm wrong? You know, what is that even possible that we could be wrong? And for me, that's a very, very hard thing to do. I was seriously ill in 2011 in and out of a coma in hospital in an ICU unit. And my wife tells me that this is true. She swears it's true. I had tubes and everything going everywhere, and I couldn't speak. I was just could only write. And I told my wife that I had lots of delusions. I said to her, the nurses are all Real Madrid supporters, and they're out to kill me. I'm a Barcelona fan. And she said, what do you mean? I said, well, they were watching the game last night, and they threw me out. And she said, David, first of all, there's no television here. Secondly, you can't move. Thirdly, the nurses are not going to make you stand out in the corridor because you're a Barcelona fan. And I was apparently adamant. And she said, she held my hand and she stroked my hand and she said very lovingly, David, 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 could you possibly think you could be wrong? To which my response was, apparently in a semi-comatose state, I wrote down, Annabelle, 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 could you possibly know that I'm right? And that's how some of us approach things, because we've just got a set of presuppositions there. G.K. Chesterton, the Roman Catholic writer, says this, the believers in miracles accept them rightly or wrongly because they have evidence for them. The disbelievers in miracles deny them rightly or wrongly because they have a doctrine against them. Now, I've come across this a lot, and you will come across it a lot, in terms of cognitive bias, what psychologists call cognitive bias, where we tend to look for information that confirms our bias rather than anything which would contradict it. So Maddie rightly said, I went to Tasmania. My belief was there's nothing touches Scotch whiskey in the whole world that comes from Scotland. If it doesn't come from Scotland, it's not real Scottish whiskey. And then to go to Tasmania and say, no, I'm not touching it. I'm not touching it. It cannot be the right thing. But then to taste it and have my experience contradict what I believed was it wasn't traumatic because the whiskey was great, but it was a challenging experience. And I think what we've got to do here is you've got to accept that logically, if there were an almighty God, then miracles could happen. That doesn't mean to say they do happen. You get televangelists will come on and they'll say, I promise you a miracle. It'll cost you $100, but I can do a miracle for you. Well, I'm sorry, there's a lot of things that happen that may be coincidental or may not be miraculous. We look for evidence. The truth is that everything we think is a matter of both reason and faith. I like what an atheist biologist, J.B.S. Haldane, says about this. The belief that our reason is just a byproduct of matter is itself a statement of faith that cannot be proven. So when you're thinking about things that are true and things that are false, how do you know that what you're thinking is true? Haldane says this, it seems to me immensely unlikely that mind is a mere byproduct of matter. For if my mental processes are determined wholly by the motions of atoms in my brain, I have no reason to suppose that my beliefs are true. They may be sound chemically, but that does not make them sound logically. And hence, I have no reason for supposing my brain to be composed of atoms. Chesterton says, reason itself is a matter of faith. It's an act of faith to assert that our thoughts have any relation to reality at all. Now, at this point, some people just give up and say, I'm just going to get on with life. As long as I've got a flat white in the morning and I can get Thai at night and my job's not too bad, you know, and there's things that you can throw in. Why would I think about all this? The answer is because you can. Because you are not a robot. Because you are a rational human being. And in that sense, you are made in the image of God. Now, I would argue that faith is not belief in something despite the evidence. I would argue that faith is belief in something because of the evidence. Which then brings us on to the virgin birth. Now, that's what we consider at Christmas. And I love what the American TV host Larry King said. He was asked who he'd like to interview if he had his pick from all history. And he said this, Jesus Christ, what's the one question you would ask him? I would ask him if he was indeed virgin born, because the answer to that would define history for me. Now, here's the problem for a lot of people, because there will be numerous churches, even around Sydney, where people like me who are clergymen will go, well, the virgin birth doesn't really matter. That's not the important issue. The important thing at Christmas is we all love one another and we're all nice to each other. No, that's not the important thing. Indeed, there's a sense in which that comes across as quite arrogant because it implies that only Christians can be that. And I don't think that's true. So, what do we mean by the virgin birth? Why is it important? I like the story of Tony Jordan, who is a scriptwriter for the BBC series EastEnders, which none of you being civilized and cultured people will know. It's not that Australia ever produces really dodgy soaps. I confess, this is the worst confession of my life. I used to watch Neighbours regularly. Every lunchtime I would go home and I'd watch 20 minutes of Neighbours. When my parents came to visit Australia, they went to the Neighbours set instead of Sydney Opera House. I mean, that's how cultured we are. And I thought life in Australia was like Neighbours. And I've even been to the Home and Away beach as well. And some of you are pretending that you don't know what I'm talking about and trying to be superior, but secretly that's what you do as well. Tony Jordan wrote for EastEnders, actually a remarkable writer in some ways. And he made this series for the BBC, a mini-series of three on the Nativity, and it was actually brilliant. I was really surprised how good it was. And this is what he said about making it. I sat with these men of the cloth, the clergymen. These were organized religion. They were all explaining to me about the Nativity and about how it never happened. And they were saying, well, of course, Mesopotamia, mumble, mumble, there was always the legend of the virgin birth. And I'm thinking, what? Hang on a minute. You're on the wrong side. That doesn't work. So I despair of them. And he gave up. And he said, I'm just going to make the TV series about what the Bible says, even if they don't believe it. And he made this remarkable series. Now, why is the virgin birth important? Again, let me just simply say, I don't understand what the difficulty is, and forgive me for being a little bit crude, but you have to be very unscientific to consider that the only way that a woman can become pregnant is if she has intercourse with a man. We know today that that's not the case. Human beings are able, through artificial insemination and other ways, to make that happen. So I wrote this once, and I wrote it in a book, and I got in enormous trouble from it, from Christians as much as anything else. It was just the way my mind worked. But I said this: why should we consider it impossible for an almighty God to create a virgin birth? He does not need IVF or a turkey baster. The trouble is that people start off with the presupposition that God does not exist, and therefore a non-existent being cannot perform such a miracle. And that is what we call circular reasoning. It's circular thinking. To claim that a virgin birth cannot happen because the being who could make such a thing happen does not exist really says nothing other than the prejudices of the person making the claim. Equally, I'm not saying that because I am making the claim that that makes it true. However, I am stating that by definition, logically, reasonably, it is not self-evidently impossible that an almighty God could do this one small miracle. And I would argue that the resurrection of Jesus Christ and the virgin birth of Jesus Christ and the teaching of Jesus Christ and the miracles of Jesus Christ are not things that you can look at as though they were fairy tales. They are not, how will I put this? You know, there was once a hobbit that lived in a hole. That's a fairly good idea that Tolkien was not writing a history. Fantastic though Lord of the Rings is. But you look at the beginning of the Gospel of Luke, which we're offering to you, and it's very clear what is being stated. Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. With this in mind, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I too decided to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught. Now, history can be false. History can be wrong. But this is claiming to be history, and it's such an extraordinary claim that we really ought to investigate it. And I think it makes a lot of sense. It's very interesting to me how I see a significant number of people There are a significant number of people who are walking away from the church, but there are a significant number of people who are also coming to faith. I'm reading this book by A.N. Wilson, who in my view is the best biography writer in the world. And it's a book about Hitler. And I studied Hitler at university and have read all the biographies in English anyway. And I just thought, what's the point of it? And then I saw it was A.N. Wilson. He's such a good writer. And it's such a short book. And it's utterly brilliant. And it reminded me of A.N. Wilson. This is probably too much information. But on a cold Saturday afternoon, which was my day off, in the Highlands of Scotland, I like nothing better than to sit in the bath with coffee, bit of coffee cake, Spectator magazine, a book, there just seemed to be a theme here, a dram, and just to keep me going. And I would spend 2 hours. You come out shriveled like a prune. But it was just a wonderful way of keeping warm and chilling and relaxing. And I remember one Saturday I was sitting and I almost jumped out of the bath with shock because I was reading a Spectator and there was A.N. Wilson, one of the most famous atheists in the world, saying, "And so God breathed into the man his spirit and the man became a living being. Is there any more wonderful line in the whole of human literature?" And he then said, "I have come to faith." And I could not believe, I was gobsmacked. I was utterly stunned. And I've seen others like that. My own sister was the most militant atheist, and she became a Christian in her mid-40s. I'm saying that people should be asked to believe not because they're in the midst of a crisis, not because they admire other people, but because of the evidence. I don't believe that it is right to have blind faith. Blind faith is by definition dumb. But faith doesn't mean that you know and understand everything. You require a degree of humility. But what I'm encouraging you to do this Christmas is to investigate actually who Jesus is. And when we talk about that, we're not saying, my view is I don't believe I can compel anybody to believe or persuade anyone to believe. But I just ask people to have an open mind to inquire and to look. I think maybe one other thing to say in that. I think that Jesus came to give us something that is beyond any gift that we could receive at Christmas. For me, Christmas and New Year is quite special. I grew up in a Christian home, but utterly rejected it when I was about 12 years old. I refused to go to church. I know this sounds strange, but I was at 13 years old, I was really interested in politics, so I became a communist. I remember standing in front of the television, cheering on the Vietnamese against the Americans. It was just, I was really concerned about injustice and stuff in the world. I wanted nothing to do with Christianity because it seemed to me, the church seemed full of hypocrites. I didn't realize how hypocritical I was in even saying that. And I remember one Christmas and New Year, we used to go to a lot of parties. Apparently, Australia shuts down for the next 2 months. I wasn't aware of this. But when I'm saying to people, can I see you in December or January? Oh, no, we're away on holiday for goodness knows how long. But we had parties between Christmas and New Year. And I phoned up a friend and said, where are we going tonight? What party are we going to? And he said to me, God is good. And I went, what? And I was so annoyed because he didn't come from a Christian background and I did. And I knew even when he said it, he'd become a Christian. And I thought, first of all, one, that's not fair that you'd become a Christian. And two, why have you done that? And he started talking to me. And I said, okay, give me a break. And we went, instead of to a party, we went to what they called a watch night service on New Year's Eve. And I never forget this. I remember the clock up on the wall. It was a digital clock and it went to 0000 at midnight. And I remember praying, God, if you exist, you show me and I'll serve you the rest of my life. And I went out into the town hall center outside and I was looking for the lightning. Nothing happened. Next day, nothing happened. Next day, nothing happened. 2 weeks, nothing happened. And then one Sunday I got up and I shared a bedroom with two of my brothers. We lived in a farm cottage. And I said to my kid brother, come on, we're going to go to church. I'm going to go to church to find out about this. And my kid brother said, no. So I beat him up, and he came to church with me. This is what we call very effective evangelism. And for those of you who've got misconceptions about Christians, you know, you better come back to a meeting or we'll beat you up. No, that's not how it works. But that's how it worked in that instance. So the two of us headed off to church, and I'm sitting, and they were singing a psalm, a song out of the Bible. And I just sat there and I thought, you complete idiot. Of course God exists. It doesn't make sense. Nothing makes sense. I thought I'd be a secret Christian for a while, but it didn't work out because I got outed. I came out, as they say. And since then, I've followed Jesus Christ. And I would say that although I've had many doubts and many ups and downs, that the evidence for Christ and following Christ is the most wonderful thing that can happen. So we're going to have some questions, but can I recommend the Luke's Gospel? You can take one of these, and it's also got my card in it, because I want you to take me out and buy me every type of malt whiskey so I can taste them and see. The Japanese especially, I'm told they're really good. No, this card is here, so if you're interested in doing a kind of online study, you're welcome. We also, in City Bible Forum, have this Word One-to-One, which is where you meet with someone and you read through John's Gospel and discuss that. Again, it's without kind of obligation. You're not signing up to join, you know, a church or a cult or anything like that. It's just if you want to investigate. Those are available. And if you've got any further questions that we don't do just now, then do feel free to email me. My email is very simple. It's theweeflee@gmail.com. And, you know, I hang around here, and if you want to have a coffee or anything anytime, feel free to do that, because I cannot stress to you how important it is to investigate these things.
All right, so we're going to start with Q&A. Now, first question. David, I don't know you well, but you seem to be logical. That's pretty nice.
Logical, yeah. You obviously don't know me well. I'm quite delusional at times, but yeah.
What evidence do you rely on for a virgin birth? Sure, it's possible, but how do you know it actually happened?
Okay, it's very limited, the evidence. I accept that. So the evidence is basically what's found in the Bible and what is stated, and it follows on from what is said about Jesus and what happened with Jesus later. So basically, it's because I trust the writers of the Bible. Now, the problem then is you say, well, why do you trust the writers in the Bible? So actually, I get asked this question so much that I wrote a book about Jesus called Magnificent Obsession, which sets out all the evidence. And if you are genuinely interested, and this is an amazing offer for a Scotsman, I'm willing to give it to you for nothing. I have run out, so you'd have to give me your email or address and make sure I can contact you. But I would not believe without evidence. But it's not just because of the virgin birth. I think the virgin birth is logical, it makes sense, but only if all the other things fall into place. It's a good question, though.
Yeah. So does it matter if Jesus was virgin born?
Yeah, I think it matters for two reasons. Number one, if it's not true, then the Bible is telling lies. And how can you, if you pick out the bits of the Bible you like and the bits you don't like, you end up in a lot of trouble. And number two, I think that there's two really important issues here. One is the honouring of Mary, that Jesus' DNA came from Mary. It didn't come from Joseph. And I think there's what we would call a theological reason for that as well. I think Jesus did not have any sin. Every single human being is born with sin, but because of his miraculous birth, Jesus isn't. And I think that that's significant. But yeah.
So instead of using miracles, why doesn't God use more obvious, clearer methods to reveal himself to people?
He does. And that's why if you were to say, I'm only going to believe in God if I see a miracle, you're going to wait a long time, because in my view, miracles are relatively rare. And anyway, you know, lots of unusual things can happen. My view is that God does speak to us. I think that I grew up, as I said, in the Highlands of Scotland, and the view was just as great as this. And for me to believe that it was all an accident was just impossible. I'm a historian and study a lot of history. And again, I see so many things. I think God has given the Bible. There's a song in the Bible called Psalm 19 where it says, "The heavens declare the glory of God." I lived in an area where there was virtually no light pollution. And I used to just stare at the stars and be utterly amazed. And I couldn't not believe. I tried to be an atheist, but I couldn't, because it just was so dumb. I apologize if you're an atheist, but it was. And I just couldn't do it. And part of it was seeing, but I think because of a lack of capacity within us, we also need God to speak to us. And I think he's done that through the Bible. I mean, I think the Bible's an amazing miracle. I think he's done it through Jesus. But you're right. If you're saying, I'm just going to wait for a miracle to happen to me, or I'm not going to believe, you're probably going to be waiting a long, long time.
So I guess, just this kind of following on from that question. Have you seen God continue to perform miracles today?
Yes and no. I mean, there's some extraordinary, you know, I hear people say God has done this and God has done that, and you become quite cynical, to be honest.
One I think is really funny is like, oh, you know, I prayed and God gave me a car park.
God normally works through normal means. But a miracle is a supernatural intervention. I used to laugh at my wife for praying for a car parking space, but I don't laugh anymore. I'll mention one specifically. In the year 2011, or 2012, I was speaking at a conference after I'd recovered from illness, and a scientist stood up and he said, "The reason I don't believe in God is because I've never seen anyone healed in answer to prayer." And so I took my talk and I ripped it up and threw it in the bin. And I said, okay, I'm going to tell you what happened to me. And I was ill in 2011. I was in hospital. I was in a coma. My wife was told I had a 50-50 chance of living one particular weekend, and it was going to get worse, and it did get worse. She was also told to start looking for a new house because our house belonged to the church. And they said, even if your husband recovers, he will be very severely brain damaged. And yes, I know all the jokes, so you don't need to make them. How do you know you're not? they were just desperate. They were just stuck. And the surgeon didn't know what to do. Nobody knew what to do. And my church, the whole denomination, very unusually for them, they said to everyone, no matter what you're doing in the church, at 12 o'clock on this Sunday in November, stop and pray for David. Well, they did. And from that Sunday, I got better. Now, you can put that as a coincidence, but I'll tell you what the surgeon said. And my surgeon was a Muslim. And he said to me as I'm leaving hospital, he said, you are a very blessed man. You have come so close to death. And I said, I want to thank you for saving my life. And he said, I didn't save your life. I didn't know what to do. He said, I believe that God saved your life. I've only seen in my whole, his 30 years career as a surgeon, he said, I've only seen two people. I can't explain why they're alive, and you're one of them. And so I believe it was medicine. Yes, I believe it was his skill. I believe many different things. But I also believe that God did answer prayer. And I do see that as miraculous. Others may not. I can't ask you to believe on the basis of that because you don't know if I'm telling the truth. You can't really investigate it. And there are lots of other explanations. But personally, yes.
We just have one more question. What would it take you to give up your faith?
Oh, that's simple. If you brought me the bones of Jesus. So I've had lots of arguments with people about creation evolution. I don't care, to be honest, too much. I really don't. There are lots of different things that I would look at. But what would make me give up is if Jesus wasn't alive. Because that's why I believe. And, you know, there are times, some of you who are Christians here will identify with this. There are three times in my life, I've been a Christian for 40 years, but there are three times in that period that I've gone through a period of absolute blackness and darkness, thinking, is this true? Have I been brainwashed? And, you know, that the way I got out of that, believe it or not, is just intellectually, rationally, it just made so much sense to me. I think experientially, I feel it as well, but sometimes you don't feel it. And I think I see it in so many different things. But I'm just overwhelmed at the goodness and the beauty and the love of Jesus. And for me, Christmas wouldn't be worth having without Christ. You take Christ out of Christmas, you've got nothing. But I'll tell you this. I think if you take Christ out of life, I don't think you've got much of a life, to be honest. I'm sorry. I don't mean to offend. I'm just saying that what you've got can be so much better if you come to know who Jesus is. And so that maybe that's a good way to end. We'll leave it there.
Thank you so much, David.
Well, thank you.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.